appreciate you tuning in. We're getting close to the first day of spring, I guess. I talk about the weather a little bit now and then. My wife and I were married on March 21st, a number of years back, 1987. And, you know, March 21st is supposed to be the first day of spring. Well, we were married in Montana and got stuck in a horrendous, well, I got married in Great Falls, Montana, and we were going to Glacier National Park, basically, for our honeymoon, a little town between East and West Glacier called Essex, Montana. And when I was in college, I became a Christian through an organization called Navigators, and a member of Navigators used to own the Isaac Walton Inn in Essex, which was an old Burlington Northern train station, really beautiful. And in the summer, we used to go up for what they'd call a summer training program. It was a Christian thing. You'd spend like 2 weeks before you went home for summer, and you'd work your tail off. You were there for free. You'd work your tail off for them. They'd give you food. You'd work hard during the day, Christian speakers at night, get a good night's sleep because you're working so hard. And the year we were there, or one of the years we were there, we were carving cross-country ski trails. So you have Glacier National Park, which, by the way, if you've never been there, folks, you need to go in the summer. If you think you know what a mountain is and you haven't been to Glacier National Park, I would challenge you to guess again. You don't know what a mountain is until you've been to Glacier Park. So my wife and I chose to spend our honeymoon up there because we were of severely meager means. And so March 21st, we get married. We start heading up there. Terrible snowstorm hits. We end up sliding off the road right outside of Browning, Montana, which is one of the most dangerous reservation areas in Montana. Very dangerous. It's the Blackfoot tribe. And trust me, I grew up between five reservations, and Browning is the one you do not want to get stranded in. Bad things happen in Browning. Very bad. And as a matter of fact, when we were going through Browning, before we slid off the road, in downtown Browning, we had to swerve in the road. No exaggeration. In downtown Browning, we had to swerve into the other lane because there was a dead, bloated horse laying in the middle of the road. This is just kind of the nature of that town. The government has built, you know, homes and everything for the people, and you see them where they'll cut holes out of the back of the house so their horses can drink out of the bathtub, and things like that are all true. So anyway, we're driving through March 21st, terrible, terrible storm. We slide off the road, get stuck. We're stranded out in the middle of nowhere. Wait, I'd say 20 minutes, a truck goes by. Blizzard conditions. We luckily get him to pull over. We grab our bags. He hauls us down the road about 20 miles north into, we were very lucky to find a little, one of those tiny, you know, vacancy, single level, total dump hotels that had the flickering vacancy sign on. So we go in and spend the night, and, you know, that was quite the interesting first night, but was definitely a dump. And the next day we had some people come up, help us get our truck out of, or our car out of the ditch, and headed on up to the Isaac Walton Inn, which is, like I said, up by Glacier. And then we spent our honeymoon cross-country skiing through Glacier National Park, which is probably one of the most beautiful things you can imagine. That park is magnificent enough in the summer, but to have it to yourself in the winter is beyond unbelief. We carried a very large caliber pistol in the case we came across any grizzly bears, because yes, there is no shortage of grizzly bears up there. Although that early in the year, the snow was very, very deep. And that's kind of how our marriage all began. And so I guess we're true Montana people. So when I think of March 21st, that's what I think of. I think of the first day of spring. I think of massive amounts of snow. I think of my marriage, and but most of all, I think of a really cool honeymoon in a old Burlington Northern train station. So I don't know what part of the country March 21st really is, the first day of spring. All that that means, for those of you, which I know all of you understand, the summer solstice and the winter solstice and the you know, the high and the low sun, is it basically means that the sun is passing the Tropic of whatever it is, Capricorn, or I'm sorry, my astronomy is old, and heading north. And that just means the days are going to become warmer. And I'll be honest with you, folks, I am Northwest bred and born, and I am getting tired of them winters. I like the tropics. I like the warm. I live on the water. I live out by Coeur d'Alene Lake. And I just love to boat. I think the water is so therapeutic. And I spend half of my year waiting for the other half of the year. It's just who I am. It's my nature. Again, it's that Montana born and bred. I grew up, you know, there's an area in Montana, and don't ask me why I'm telling you all this. I hope I'm not boring you to death. But in western Montana, it's called the Swan Valley, and there's a chain of lakes. And I had some relatives that owned like 14 rentals on Salmon Lake, which is one of the first lakes you hit if you come off I-90 and head north up Swan Valley. And then as you go further up, there's all kinds of lakes in it. At the top is Swan Lake, and we used to have a cabin on Pierce Lake. And, you know, it's just that deep mountain Montana, real lake, you know, country. And Salmon Lake, where my cousins lived, has one, you know, a while ago I saw on Pinterest years back, the most beautiful lily pad in the world was right off my cousin's deck. And it's big. It's very big. People come from Japan and all around the world to see it. And it's just beautiful country. And so I think that's where I just got that love of mountains and love of water. And that's really where, at least in the summers, I love it. And then, of course, in the winters, it's darn cold. I grew up in Great Falls, Montana. And, you know, and people, you talk about global warming. You know, folks, I'm not going to deny there's temperature change, there's climate change. You know, global warming has kind of fallen by the wayside. And how pathetic, right? It's like, well, we can't really make up our minds, so let's just say any change is our fault, and then therefore we can control, you know, this, or we can control that. And I mean, and really what it's about, folks, is controlling people, isn't it? I mean, let's face it. If we go back in history, I mean, we've got all kinds. You know, when you go through the redwood forest by Sonoma, they have trees that have fallen that are 850 years old, and they've cut them so you can see the rings of all the weather. And then they have notes and markers, and they show huge times of incredible rainfall and huge times of incredible drought and huge times of incredible heat and then incredible cold. It's the earth we live on. Folks, this is a massive ecosphere. It is a big system. Can you imagine trying to regulate even a biosphere, even a greenhouse, a millionth the size of the earth's atmosphere? How about a trillionth the size of the earth's atmosphere? You couldn't regulate the temperature well. You'd use up all the energy on earth. And yet God has created a system that is so magnificently balanced. I mean, that's where my mind, I guess, because of my science background goes. And I'm just like, folks, why can you not see? Sometimes it makes me so sad. I'm like, God made it so obvious. It's so cool. Can't you see what he's done? It's so incredible. You know, you got to see this, and people don't, and it's sad. I mean, to be honest. So, but what I was saying was, when I was growing up, we had some tough winters. I mean, they were frankly tougher than this. And I know everybody's like, when I was a kid, I walked uphill to school barefoot and 6 feet of snow both directions. And, you know, but I'm not telling that. It was cold. We used to get snow drifts. Great Falls is incredibly windy. It's right off the edge of the Rockies. And the wind comes whipping down the side of the Rockies. I mean, from where I grew up, you can see the Rockies probably 80 miles away, 60 to 80 miles away. And it's just a massive sweeping wall. And it's big. I mean, from where I grew up, you're looking at them and you're seeing, you know, I think we grew up at about, Great Falls is probably around 3,800 square feet or feet above sea level. And you can see the Rockies, you know, at 10,000 feet above, as far as the eye can see, north or south, coming all the way out of Canada, all the way up from the Northern Territories, heading down south. It's a massive rift in the earth. Something to do with tectonic plate shifting that I believe a lot of it occurred during the flood. But the wind just comes whipping down there. And, I mean, for us to have 70-mile-an-hour winds was really not uncommon. Gusts up to 70, gusts up to 80, but 40-mile-an-hour winds, you know. And when you've got a cold day, I mean, when it's 0 or 6 below and you've got a 30, 40-mile-an-hour wind, you've never felt cold till you feel that. And we would get drifts. Snow drifts that literally would go up the roof of our house. They would drift. We would sled from the roof of our house down massively. And it was, and that's just not happening anymore. So what's going on? I mean, is there global warming? Sure, there is. But folks, like I said, historically, you're going to go through history. You're going to see changes in climate. And the problem is, if we were getting global cooling, they'd blame us for that. You know, if all the storms stopped and all the weather became even and temperate, they'd blame us for that, no matter what would happen. And, you know, Al Gore started this mess with his movie Inconvenient Truth, which, by the way, was a lie. I mean, you know, people started this mad race, the lies that didn't come true. I'm going to look this up from... Let's see, The Inconvenient. I've got it here somewhere. Movie with Gore. You know, the lies that didn't come true are unbelievable. I mean, he predicted absolute craziness. He predicted that sea levels are going to rise at an alarming rate. He predicted that... sea levels would rise 6 meters in 10 years with the melting of Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets. Now we know the South Pole is gaining more ice than it's losing. So the North Pole's losing and the South Pole's gaining. What's that tell you? It tells you weather changes. You probably remember back when they talked about El Nino, and El Nino is where the weather pattern centralizes around the planet. And when El Nino came to the north, I think it's literally when it's north, it's Nino, and when it's south, it's Nina. But basically, when it became El Nino, we were told we're going to have a little more harsh storms and things are going to warm up and become more temperate. And they did. And yet, so what happens is it removed the heat from the south and brought it to the north. So we've got a little more temperate climate than normal. But again, you have to look at the size of our planet and our solar system and the intricate workings of this Swiss watch, if you will. You've probably all heard the argument of a watch, you know, the watchmaker. If you found a Swiss watch floating around in space, would you say, wow, look at what evolution built and look at how all these parts came together and created this magnificently operating timepiece? I mean, of course you wouldn't. You would know that there was a designer. But because of the way things are designed, and they're so different than the way we design things, and that God makes things that will weather and change and erode, and they have personality. They're not just all, you know, we're pretty simple. Everything's straight-edged. I mean, you know, we do things real simple, and we're simple. We're created in his image, but we're minuscule compared to him. And yet you see, you know, or they'll say, look, you'll see a repetition in evolution in these animals. You know, that's that they have four legs. They have their eyes placed similar. Their stomach operates the same. And then they'll say, well, see, evolution, you know, this is survival of the fittest. This is absolutely not survival of the fittest. If survival of the fittest was true, you and I would not be here. There would be insect crustaceans that were so massive on this earth that they would have already destroyed themselves because they would have continued to grow and evolve and change. And the whole thing is like billions and billions of years. Well, why billions and billions of years? Well, because we can't ever even, you know, see any remote change. We can't even detect the most minor changes. So they have to say billions and billions of years ago. But the fact of the matter is that we are not survival of the fittest just because we have a brain. We are exactly what God has said we are from the very beginning. They mock man from their earliest roots. And one of the great confusers is the fact that there's a flood in the middle, so we don't get the unadulterated material from the very beginning, which it does cause confusion for archaeologists. If you add in the flood, things make a lot more sense. But you see this uniform belief in God. It's a constant that doesn't change. Their beliefs in God fluctuate. Some get radical. Some get, you know, and it's just like people in general. I mean, if you don't have a compass and you think you know where you're going, you get messed up. So if you don't have the centralized truth, you don't have God at the center, you're going to get off base. It's difficult to find God and to remain constant with him without his word. Early on, you know, post-flood, Noah brought forth his word, and then it spread around the what's now the Middle East because of his immigration from the Ararat and Turkey on down south. There was a pretty rapid rush into the Egyptian plains, mainly because it's so fertile. It's referred to as the Fertile Crescent in the archaeological records show that it was, you talk about fertility. I mean, you could grow anything. It was a magnificent land. And that's why the most powerful of powerful made their way there and, you know, and built these massive empires and things like that. Now we've seen, you know, weather changes on earth since then and so on. But, you know, you have this uniformity in the belief in God in the Middle East. I mean, you know, over time we had Muhammad go off the deep end and create Islam. But basically what he was doing was resurrecting Baal worship. And it's interesting that the devil only can steal, kill, or destroy. He cannot build or create. So he takes what God makes and he steals it and he breaks it and he ruins it. We just have to realize that when you see those kinds of variations, what the cause of it is. And the cause of it is, a lot of times, it's man's sinfulness, it's man's confusion, it's people's, you know, mental illness, frankly. Psychiatrists that read the writings of Muhammad say without question he was schizophrenic. And so, you know, that's an interesting concept. But we've had global warming on a grand scale from the time of the flood. You have to realize at the time of the flood, there are all kinds of theories. I tend to lean, I think if you look towards the Bible, it tells you a lot. And there's stories of, you know, the days of Peleg where the earth was dividing and stories of the earth eating up people, literally opening up and eating up people. And we know that it happened quickly. We know that there was a firmament above. We know, according to the scripture, that he separated the waters below from the waters above. And one theory that's very interesting is we find animals that are literally flash frozen. And a theory is if there was a firmament above, however that worked, however the waters above worked, if meteorites or asteroids or whatever it was that hit the earth shattered them at the time of the flood, which I believe was the product of the destruction of Rahab, which is mentioned in the Bible multiple times, which was probably the dwelling place of the devil for various reasons that I won't get into today, but there's a lot of scripture to support that. That the minute that that ice shell, that firmament was shattered, ice cold air, at, I mean, ice cold's not even a proper term. Minus 273 degrees Kelvin is absolute freezing. That's where all molecular activity stops. All molecular motion freezes, stops. Molecules stop moving. And if you shattered that ice shell with the heat exchange with outer space, you would have an influx of air straight from outer space that would be so cold that anything that it hit would instantly be flash frozen. So if you were standing there as a human and you got hit with that, you're done. You just freeze no matter what. If you're chewing food, talking, whatever, you're done. That's it right now. You're gone. That's why we find woolly mammoths frozen standing up. And then we have after that, we have the Ice Age, which came next because the Earth became incredibly cold. And we have the polar caps. You know, we have areas of the Earth that I think were instantly frozen in ice. They remained frozen during the flood. The waters receded. And then afterwards, we find these creatures that were frozen in ice. We don't necessarily find a lot of certain types of creatures. We don't find a lot of dinosaurs and stuff. And they may have been, they seem to turn up more in like the Great Plains areas, the big wide open spaces, not so much the northern territories as much. I mean, they'll be in the Montana areas and things like that, but they where they're found is where it's wide open, where it seems like the waters moved in mass, and it may have taken their bodies and then eventually buried them in silt and soot. And we still dig up in Montana, where I'm from, they're still digging up dinosaurs that still have tissue that is fresh. They're literally areas where, and they've been, you know, exposed, and the tissue is still soft. It's kind of creepy. I grew up with dinosaur bones and being told they were just garbage and just throwing them out, little tiny flecks and pieces, and had I hung on to them, they'd have been something special. But as a kid, they were nothing. We'd go to the buffalo jumps and look for Indian heads or arrowheads and things from the Indians. But we just, you know, you'd be like, oh, cool, a dinosaur bone. And they'd always be like, yeah, but it's not a good one. You know, back then in the when I was a little kid, I mean, if you didn't find a big dinosaur femur or something, it was just rubbish. Now, man, if I'd have hung onto those little parts, who knows, right? That's how times have changed. And so based on that, of course, we've had some global warming and some temperature changes, but God has us set up in this system. Eventually, God says he's going to wrap it all up. He's going to burn it all up. He's going to take us all away. It's all coming to an end. You know, it even says in the Bible that that he stretched out the heavens. Well, now we're finding out, you know, if you grab a sheet and you stretch it, the greatest tension on that sheet isn't in the middle. It's near the edges. And now we're finding, as we study the universe more and more, that there's more energy near the outsides of our universe. That's where there's all this positive energy, this incredible amounts of energy and tension. And that, you know, that we, and then they get into all kinds of antimatter and stuff to try to describe it because it doesn't make sense. And then in the areas like where we're at, where we appear to be very centrally located, I know one time I did a show in the past about, you know, how everything in the universe basically centralizes around the Milky Way galaxy. Even the Big Bang, the cross of where things were centralized and where they came from and out from which they move, they all seem to be moving very centrally away from us. If we consider ourselves at the center, we can make all kinds of sense of their movement. Ironically, when we exclude ourselves and say, oh, no, that's too egocentric, we have to come up with a different theory, and we pick other centers of the universe, then we have to use all these heavy-duty mathematical algorithms and random variables to try to define the movement of space of objects in space, which does not make sense. And so God did put us in the amphitheater of space. He put us at the center, so we get to view it all. And he did put it all there for our pleasure. He created the universe. I think that I personally believe there's probably some incredibly cool stuff out there. There's probably planets that are made of diamonds and all kinds of stuff just because of the nature of heat and explosions and the way it appears he did things instantaneously. There's probably other life out there. There's so many references in the Bible to other beings that are far beyond. There's quite a list when you get into the different demons and the different angels, and those are just the ones we've been disclosed in the canonical scriptures, and there's some in the non-canonical scriptures as well. So anyway, we are in the middle of this mess right now, believing that we're chasing global warming or climate change. Really, the big stimulus, again, was Al Gore, okay? So he told us the sea levels were going to rise. We know that the South Pole's gaining more ice than it's losing. It's a great, also a great amount of the losing is due to underground heat. Like for Greenland, its melting cycle doesn't seem to have changed much. In fact, it seems to be very regular, and the sea level has been increasing at a steady level since we started recording them. This is nothing new. If the rising sea level is so catastrophic, why does Al Gore live in a beachfront mansion? He also told us that our carbon dioxide, CO2 levels, are the control knob for temperature. And he's a climate cultist, basically. And he believes or claims that carbon dioxide, what you and I exhale, is what controls temperature. And climate models have constantly reflected that reality. Unfortunately, it's the sun, stupid, to paraphrase Bill Clinton when he said it's the economy, stupid. Indeed, you've got satellite data shows no increase in temperature for 19 years or two decades despite a constant increase in CO2. The sun, on the other hand, probably has the largest role on the Earth's climate if we understand the amount of energy it puts out. So much that scientists are talking about a significant cooling because the sun has been quieter. And, of course, climate models that NASA comes up with miserably fail, even compared to them, even when they're trying to tamper with data. They just can't make it work. When they try to reproduce this stuff to show that what Al Gore's theory is true, they can't even make a model. Okay, to justify it. Without spending too much time on this, I mean, we've got Al Gore saying, you know, Hurricane Katrina was man-made. 2 years before he released his movie, New Orleans had been devastated by Hurricane Katrina. At that time, people believed this would be the new norm because of global warming. And, it's crazy because part of New Orleans was man-made because of their neglect of the levees that protected the city, and their improvement might not be enough to withstand another of this hurricane. So of course they blame George Bush. And as far as these F3 plus hurricanes being the new norm, we haven't had one. You know, I think the last one was Wilma in October of 5. And then we have had the longest, hurricane drought recorded since then, and as far as F3 pluses and so on. Then they tell us, you know, tornadoes are increasing. I can say the same thing. It's not. F3 plus tornadoes have been declining over 60 years. Al Gore said polar bears are dying. The Norse favorite mascot is going extinct, according to Al Gore, America's Green Pope. because the ice is getting thinner because of global warming, he says they can't reproduce, so they have these pictures of the sick polar bear to prove their point. One picture of one sick polar bear to prove their point. That's not true either. There are more polar bears now than when Al Gore was born. The government of Nunavut, along with the Inuit hunters, have noticed that the polar bear population is actually getting overblown. It's getting too large. Al Gore said the Arctic ice is melting. Polar bears are supposedly disappearing and blah, blah, blah. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but Gore even predicted the complete melting by 2014. I mean, radical stuff, right? Now that we know that's not true, here's another inconvenient truth about the North Pole. It's gaining ice. 2015 saw the largest freezing growth in over two decades. So they tell us the region south of the Sahara Desert is drying up. The Sahel, it's one of the poorest places on the planet, and they say it's because of global warming. And global warming is what's causing all these wars among these tribal. You've heard it all, right? The region south, it's one of the poorest places on the planet, and it's getting drier and drier, according to Gore. Which is not true. And according to satellite images, the Sahel is in fact one of the regions that has gained the most flora density since satellites existed. All of that is due to this hated CO2, which actually acts as a fertilizer for plants. They live on CO2. Telling us CO2 is pollution, folks. If we cut CO2 out, we kill our plants. God made a system, more CO2, more plants, more oxygen, more life, more CO2, more plants, more life. Because what do plants provide? They provide, well, obviously, vegetation for all kinds of life. They provide oxygen for the atmosphere to keep it pure and clean and give us more stuff to breathe. And then when we get more life, we get more CO2, and it helps. It's a system that God made that is magnificent. I personally believe that God made this planet able to handle a lot more people than are here now. I believe before the flood, there's a high likelihood that there could have been about 12 billion people on Earth. If people lived to 700 to 900 years, and you do the math, even if they had two kids every 50 years, and you use a mortality of about 750 years, you end up at over 12 billion people on Earth at the time of the flood. It's easy math. It can actually even get higher. That's using a pretty critical mortality rate. And so the planet's designed to handle whatever it needs. The problem is greed, frankly. It's corporate greed. It's people failing to beginning to centralize and creating metropolises. Metropolises tend to hurt people. Heavy concentrations of people hurt people. We're made to live freer, more relaxed lives. I really believe that. That's why cortisol, the stress hormone, is so bad for you. You're not supposed to be running on adrenaline all day long like I do. And it's not good for your body. It develops fat and plaque and hardens your arteries and all kinds of other things. So we're not supposed to do that. the CO2, I think I covered the CO2 as pollution. That's what he tried to do. So I think you get my point there. At least I hope you do. We live in a time when things are warming up a little bit. They're going to fluctuate, but folks, don't buy into it, please. Just don't buy into it. You trusting in global warming is not trusting in your God, okay? Now, on the other hand, we should be the best ecologists on Earth. We should be the best conservationists on Earth. Jesus gave us scriptures of master leaving, the servant. In charge of the vineyard, and we need to realize that he takes that seriously as far as our responsibilities of how we take care of things when he's gone. That's the whole point of his scriptures. He wants us to take very, very good care of what he left behind. And then he says he's coming back. It says it's like when the master goes on a long journey and when he comes back, what's he going to find? And we have a serious responsibility to take incredible good care of this earth. We are its stewards, okay? It's important for us to understand it's important that we take care of it just as if we believe in God. In other words, because we do, right? So, there's Bible stories about, the master and the servant and the vineyard and, and accountability and taking care of it. And you can look those up. I don't have those scriptures available right now, but I think that you can probably find them. I think maybe there's one in maybe Matthew 21. I'll see if I can find it real quick. See if I can get this. Is a long shot, folks. This is just going off of my memory. Let me see if. Okay, let's see if I winged it wrong here. Listen to another parable. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard and put a wall around it and dug a wine press in it and built a tower and rented it out to the vine. Maybe that's not it. When the harvest time approached, he sent his slaves to the vine growers to receive his produce. The vine growers took his slaves and beat one and killed another and stoned a third. No, that's not the same one. So anyway, let's not read that one. He will bring those wretches to a wretched end and rent out the vineyard to the other vine growers who will pay him the proceeds. That's not it. My apologies. So anyway, you get the point. I know there's one in Matthew or Luke or whatever, I wasn't prepared to go there, and so I failed you, and my apologies. A couple things maybe we should touch on. We have got so much. I have not even been touching on the political stuff lately, folks, because it's so hot. I mean, if you are not, it's so annoying, okay? If you're not watching the news, I'm sorry, but you should. I get a little irritated. I don't like what's happened to Fox. I miss Bill O'Reilly. I know he was annoying, and sometimes he was centrist, but he was accurate in his reporting. I get frustrated with Tucker a little bit. I saw him had a doctor on last night that he wanted to mock and belittle because they were giving advice to people. That his story was that they were giving gun advice. And he said, well, you're not a gun expert. How would you like it if I gave medical expertise? And she said, well, of course I wouldn't. And then he mocks her. And she was basically saying that what they're doing is if they see people with mental illness or something, they're warning them about having guns around for potential suicide and things like that. And he kept saying, well, what right do you have? Blah, blah, blah. And then she said, well, we want to give responsible advice. And he goes, oh, responsible, dumping tens of millions of doses of opioids around the country and like doctors have done. And she said, we haven't done that. But the fact is, and he said, yes, you have. Folks, you've heard my opinion of the opioid thing. I do believe they're trying to fire up a new drug war. And the problem when they say tens of millions of opioid doses, you go, oh, my gosh, that is so many. But you don't realize there are people in pain. There are countries that will not prescribe opioids, and people have to die of cancer without any kind of medication. In America, we're a compassionate country, okay? A very good friend of mine had terrible cancer. And, they were able to put him into a morphine coma, okay? That's compassion. That's not cruelty, right? And you might say, well, yeah, but the quantity of doses is so high. Is it? I mean, tens of millions of doses? I mean, let's just say there's 30 million doses of opioids. And the reason I say this is because They're losing the drug war on marijuana. This is where our whole focus has been. Now they don't have a drug war to fight. They have to create a new drug war. So you take and again, it's not the you have to separate drugs from the drug war, okay? It'd be no different than prohibition. It'd be no different than a tobacco war. It'd be no different than a condom war. It'd be no different than, you know, anything. It'd be no different, you know, than a war on sports cars or motorcycles. And that we're going, and if you get caught with a motorcycle, we know they kill people and you're going to jail forever and we're going to outlaw them. And, you know, I mean, folks, it's just a vehicle by which to inject incredible amounts of money. Now, if people have addiction, the countries that are more mild and holistic in their approach do so much better. Okay. They do so much better because they treat the individual. People who struggle with this stuff are, you know, do they need to be locked up? I mean, does that really, I mean, we've been taught this. If somebody for one reason or another is seeking out painkillers or some way of numbing their pain or escaping, I guess from my perspective, I have compassion, right? I've seen people. I've been around the block. I've lived a tough life at part of my life. My dad was a bail bondsman. I grew up, my mom was had a large legal firm in the court systems, and I know what it's all about. I mean, people, you know, and the worst thing that you can do is judge others you have not walked in their shoes. We are not to do this. And we are not to criminalize people that are just seeking, you know, to relieve pain. Granted, it may be abusive. And then the problem is we always hear about the 1% or whatever that get on meth and go off the deep end and rip everybody off because they're hanging out with a bunch of scumbags and they're thieves. And, you know, I mean, that's crime. Then lock them up. You know, it's not, you're not locking somebody up because they're taking a couple Vicodin a day. You're locking them up because they're breaking into people's houses and stealing their goods. That's what laws are for. And you can make laws on those crimes harsher. But like I said, if you have 30 million opioid doses a year, and if you say the average person who does use them, for example, say somebody that has a chronic illness, Crohn's disease or rheumatoid arthritis or, you know, I mean, we can go down a litany of all kinds of things. People go through hard times with cancers and all kinds of things. Serious stomach things. I mean, a friend of mine had to have a third of his stomach removed. Can you imagine? No opioids? I mean, you can't even fathom the pain. I can't even begin to even guess what that would be like, okay? So say you take these people and let's say they're supposed to take, you know, two pills every 4 hours, you know, five times a day. Okay, so that's 10 pills a day. There's 365 days in the year. That's 3,650 doses in a year. So if you take the 30 million by, you know, divide by 3,650, now you've got 8,200 individuals who take 10 pills a day. And sure, you can drop that to 8 pills a day, and you have 10,000 individuals in America that take 8 pills a day. That's what happens when they say there's 30 million doses of opioids. It's skewed statistics. You've got to use your math. There was a situation that they were using on Fox on a little town in Pennsylvania, of all places. They had 26,000 people. And they were trying to brag, basically, that that they were releasing 2.4 million doses. 2.4 million doses of opioids into a town of 26,000 people. Doesn't that sound like a lot? That's 600 people out of 26,000 that are taking them. That's the problem with the statistics when you do the math. If you take the 600 people, you divide by the 26,000, it's 2/10 of 1%. It's just we get skewed. And I know there's people that I offend with this view. And I'll tell you, folks, the reason is because the drug war is at the core of our attacks on liberty. We have a thing called illegal search and seizure, the Fourth Amendment. We now have laws where they can seize anything. Civil asset forfeiture is insane. Loretta Lynch, before being promoted to the AG by Obama, in 1 year seized $1 billion worth of stuff. If you understand this law where they say we want to seize guns first and then due process later, man, you better have quick due process, because that is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. If you have a right to bear arms, okay, now I want you to think about this. You have a right to bear arms, and now they're going to use the Fourth Amendment, which protects you from the government seizing anything without absolute, reason, which is pretty much saying they can't, and they're going to use that to affect the Second Amendment. Now, I want to use a little bit of logic with you. And some of you may struggle with this gun thing. We went out with some friends last weekend, and they're relatively conservative. And I think you'd agree that women generally are probably a little more emotional than men. Okay, so her question was, what are we supposed to do about these guns? Are all these teachers supposed to arm themselves? We got to take away the guns. She's starting to buy into this stuff, okay? So the reason confiscating guns won't work, folks, is I want you to think about, we've got all these things I want to talk about, but I don't have time. We have to bear arms, right? You understand that. Gun-free zones were never part of the deal. I want you to think about this. I want you to visualize America as a sea of pebbles, okay? Little pebbles. The whole nation is pebbles. And there's little pebbles everywhere, little tiny lights. Just say hundreds of millions of little lights. And those lights are guns, okay? So you are in a sea of guns. There are guns all over America. And inside that sea of guns, you have these tiny little microcosms called gun-free zones. And those gun-free zones are surrounded by the sea of guns. Now, first of all, does that make sense? Okay, so here's the deal. So now you've got these little tiny microcosms called gun-free zones in the middle of this massive ocean of guns. And we're in you have two choices. Do you fortify these areas you want to protect? Think about historically. How has this always been dealt with historically? Do you fortify that which you want to protect, or do you take away all the weapons that exist on planet Earth? I mean, think of the logic. It is absolute insanity. Of course you can't take away the weapons. Then you have the Second Amendment that says we have a right to bear these arms. You are protected. This sea of guns is there for a reason. What country do you think wants to attack us on our soil? I don't care if it's Russia. I don't care who it is. I don't care if they show up with tanks and drop them from planes. They're going to have a bad day. And people say, well, what need do you have for an AR-15? I can own it responsibly. What need don't I have? I actually feel really secure owning a number of AR-15s and some other pretty amazing guns. I've got a partially semi-automatic 50 caliber Barrett, A-107. I mean, I've got a wonderful 300 Win Mag built by the man who won the world three-gun competition. I have an incredible armory of weapons that are built by some of the top Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, and a Delta Force sniper that they built personally for me as a wonderful gift. I mean, I paid for them, but terrific. You know, the best arms handlers on planet Earth built me these. And why? Why do they need them? Oh, they're military. Well, why would they need such a powerful weapon if it's not necessary? Because when it's time to defend yourself, folks, who knows what's coming? The reason for the Second Amendment is what? Two reasons. The well-regulated militia is to protect against any outside attacks and or an overthrow of tyranny by our government. Now, we're at a point where that's the most terrifying thought ever, because we watch our government overthrow, you know, small communities with MRAPs and massive military vehicles, and they mishandle things. And we're watching police get away with murder. And I'm sorry, folks, I support the police like you cannot believe. But it makes me sad when they blow it. They've got to, they think that by protecting their own, that they're making it better. They think it's necessary that they're never proven wrong. And it's just the opposite. If you know someone who can never admit fault, what do you think of that person? But if you know someone who's humble, and if a police department came out and said, look, this guy blew it. This is not what we're about. This is not who we are. And the prosecutor said, I'm sorry, but I have to prosecute this guy. And he just, what he did was wrong. It's not the way we treat our citizens. This is not what we are. We are not supposed to train our police in a military fashion that literally the training now is that they're supposed to consider themselves, vendors of violence, and that everything they face is a form of violence, and they are to match it with excessive violence in every case. They're beginning to think this way. The average age of a police officer in America over the last 20 years has dropped by 14 years. The average age of a police officer in America is 14 years younger than it was. So you've got a lot of young guys in their 20s. They don't quite have, you know, the life experience. They're playing a little different mindset. A lot of them get out in their early 30s because it's too much. They can't take it now. And they're seeing it more as a sport. And so disarming America is not the answer. Just remember that visual of a sea of guns with these gun-free zones that make no sense. If you fortify these places, yeah, sure, fortify our schools. I have nothing wrong with that. There are dang children. Put up razor wire. I don't care. There are kids. Now, it shouldn't be that way, but it is. So we deal with reality, not idealism. Oh, you know, they all have this idealistic, what if we could live in a fantasy world? Well, we don't. Apparently, we live in a tough spot. We've been converted into a terrorist nation because of our enemies. We've become our enemies, and it's really sad. And we've got all these confused left-winging socialist nutbags, you know, and I wish I had more time to talk, because even Karl Marx's theories, if you look back at the time Karl Marx lived during the proletariats, it was a brutal, nasty, heavy, industrialized, you know, workers were being abused. It was a terrible time. It's not what it is now. And folks, last but not least, again, I wish I had more time to talk about it. There are so many distractions today, okay? Things are good on the outside, but the system at its core is broken, okay? We're on a fiat currency system. We've got a man who knows Trump, who knows how to bring the money home. Hyperinflation is coming. I promise you, if you get into hard assets, and that is, you know, basically the biblically attributed forms of true wealth are gold and silver, livestock, real estate, and human life. And I don't think you'll be buying any slaves lately. Real estate's got its drawbacks. Livestock's a little bit tough. Precious metals-based assets, get them. I'll just keep it short and sweet. Get them. Call us. Let us build you a portfolio. I don't care what your savings account level is. We'll build you a nice setup. The prices are terrific. The value is incredible. The focus is away right now. The focus is on paper, paper, paper. Everybody wants to get rich in the stock market. You don't need to be doing that. It's not a great place to be. It's high, and sure, it might go higher. I keep saying that, and it kind of doesn't, but it probably will when we get this big influx of overseas dollars. Protect yourself ahead of time. Give us a call. You got the phone number, 444-0044. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate your patience at the beginning of the show. And I'd really like to be able to help you out build a portfolio. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.